now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey.
We're here for another laugh fest.
Oh, we are going to laugh it up.
Yeah, so sure, man.
Well, we have been the last 5 minutes. But
we got our act together. We could at least start, you know, push play and record.
I'm just too tired.
Your hair looked a little windblown there, buddy.
I was a little windblown. Riding in the Brad Cummings Killmobile.
Yeah, dude. Gee, I got one.
Got a convertible. What are you doing?
I've always wanted a convertible, and now I can have one, so I got one.
With all the starving kids in India, you got a convertible.
Jesus said I could get it, so I did.
Oh, yeah, Jesus.
I prayed about it, and it was
those
fine.
Those are iPods slipping off all over the world.
Whatever.
People trying to feed their children,
you
and all of a sudden.
Snarky dude, I tell
snarky
you.
Snarky dude. Got to hold your feet to the fire. You're going
to
get converted.
I'm not going to hold my feet
stuff.
To the fire. I'm going to put my foot to the pedal.
Yeah.
That's why your hair's all windblown.
That's why I hate those cars, because people who get them drive like they own them.
And then you roll down the window and you put your arm out. You were looking
fine. And
the
drive like they own the road.
You were looking fine.
Yeah, I wasn't driving like an idiot either.
You're trying to jump out.
I did a couple of times. My goodness.
I didn't hit nothing.
Now I know what Sarah feels like when she's sitting on the other side when I'm driving.
Oh,
gee, a couple of times.
Get in your Oldsmobile, I tell you.
I ain't got no Oldsmobile. My first
like
car
it.
Was
You're
an Oldsmobile.
You like it.
Well, I'm back from the upper northwest.
And you didn't see a single mosquito. I don't
I know,
believe
I said,
it.
I said I saw one.
One?
One.
Dude, it's the state bird. I used to live in Madison, Wisconsin. Those things are the state bird, especially in summer.
You know, I'm always aware when I hear these apocryphal things to hate about a given climate that they're usually not true. They're true.
Dude, I lived
two
there.
Or three days a
no.
year, and everybody remembers no. it being an ugly thing.
For January and February, it's never above zero.
I played golf twice in the morning. Never saw
know,
a bug
nice.
To be contended with.
Dude,
never
you come out at dusk. Pal.
I was out at night. One home we were
didn't
in.
Didn't you see any of the blue zappers that like you know, are telling the bugs to come worship here, and they come close and all of a sudden you didn't see any of that?
I don't recall.
You
seeing
weren't
one
in Wisconsin.
Zapper.
I don't believe you. You went someplace else.
There are people that saw me there. Please, write to Brad, every last one
it.
Of you.
You didn't see a
Brad
blue bug light?
At thegodjourney.com.
Right. You didn't see right. a blue bug light that was roasting and toasting bugs.
I know what those are. We had them on the farm. No, I never saw one.
I don't believe that.
I'm sorry. I saw one mosquito, and I took it right out of the air. It was slow and
you
big.
You killed it?
It was young and stupid.
What did it ever do to you?
It's what its ancestors have done to me in times past. That's,
oh,
that's enough for
you
me.
Reap what you sow, huh?
Yeah, evidently. There's a podcast there somewhere.
Yeah,
I'm
maybe.
Sure.
Maybe.
Maybe. But, yeah, it was... I didn't have all the bug thing. I didn't get the great corn you told me about. I had one legitimate...
You were in Minnesota or Wisconsin or Michigan?
All of them.
And you didn't find any corn?
No, I got one piece of corn at some seafood fest in Marquette. I got to tell you, it tastes like
seafood
dirt.
Seafood fest?
Yeah. It tastes like dirt. It was the worst piece of corn I've ever had. And after that, it just scared me from eating any more. So I went with my favorite, you know, green beans and stuff like that.
Well,
broccoli,
God bless you there, Jacobson.
All
there.
My favorite foods. Well, it was just disappointing.
No
that's
mosquitoes and no corn. I don't. You weren't the Midwest. I don't know where you went, but you weren't the Midwest.
I think the days have changed. I hear people. I hear this all over. I mean, I heard it even up in Marquette, and I kind of hear it all around. People say, and this is not about bugs or anything, but every place in the world has a reason why God moving here would be nearly impossible. I'm serious.
I would tell you, in the winter, it's too cold there.
Well, I don't know about that. And no one brought up the weather issues, but it's just Native American issues. Or you go to the New England, it's the witchcraft trials. Or you go, you know, in the South. And
doesn't God live down here with us in Southern California?
The world thinks that. Well, I don't think anybody...
Not in a morality sense.
I don't think God believes
that's
it.
Not really that. We're supposed to get earthquakes and fall off the planet and die.
I don't think anybody believes God's in California, not from the press we
oh,
get
really?
Out there. But, you know, all over the world, I've been to Europe, Asia, everywhere you go, it's like This is spiritually a very dark area because...
It is?
And they got 1,700 reasons why.
Oh, wow.
And actually, I'm going to say, you know what?
Lions and tigers and bears. Oh, my.
Everybody in the world says that. The enemy's got us all talked out.
Freaked out.
It's
in
amazing.
Isaiah, it says that we're quoted. In Isaiah, do you know that?
You're quoted?
You are too.
I'm quoted.
Both of us.
In the last day.
At the end of it, we're going to look upon him and go, is that the one who terrorized the nations? And you're just going to go like, oh, please. And we're going to be bummed out. So I figure if we say that then, why not start saying it now?
And we're not saying it to Jesus, right?
No, you're just acknowledging that little pipsqueak, the Satan guy, he's real.
Yeah.
But he's not as amazing and powerful as we fear.
That's amazing. I think what we've gotten out of all that spiritual warfare...
Is a big devil, a little God.
Call down the principalities and powers. There's a great reason everywhere why God can't act.
Well, because they called them all down.
Instead, you know, I think we're gonna stay at the end of the day, we look at each other and go... Oh, that was you? Oh, that was you? I didn't think you could work here. I wasn't looking. I don't care where you live. I don't care what the history of your place has been.
God can take over.
God's spirit is already moving, living, thriving where you live. The question is not, is he moving here? It's really whether
How?
I'm seeing it or not.
Exactly.
And if I'm not, God, would you open my eyes and let me see? He's not playing this game of... You know what?
I can't go there.
You had those witch trials 300 years ago. Sorry, it's dead.
I abandoned the land.
You did slavery. Sorry, can't work there. And Germany, the whole Nazi thing, can't move there. God's not limited by any of that stuff. I really think we've gotten a whole buy-in. Actually, it's kind of that same, I love this song from the 60s, that Delta Dawn, what's that flower? Is old Helen Reddy song.
I was not born.
You remember, I'm sure. Helen Reddy song. It's about this gal. She's waiting for this lover who said he's coming but never coming. And I honestly think that's where a lot of believers end up living. It's this... Yeah, he said he'd be here. We're
the rapture bus is really
and
late.
We're all dressed up, got our flowers in our hair, and we're just waiting for him to come, and he never comes. And people walk by and go, there's a crazy lady on the corner. He's not ever coming. And he is among us. He is among his people. And I think we've got to just remember to shake ourselves from all that.
How's that again?
Just got to shake that. It's like the dog crawling out of the pond and saying, you know what? He can move here. He is moving here. And so I got a lot of questions. It was interesting in that whole area. A lot of questions, revival questions.
Of course.
Which wasn't the Lakeland, Toronto thing. It wasn't all that. It was just, is there a revival coming?
Well, if God's left and he can't be there, then the only thing you got is the hope that he'll one day come back in an event called revival.
And I really do think that's where organized religion is stuck. And I don't mean Sunday morning meetings. I mean just the
mindset.
Whole religious mindset of trying to earn it is this is so bad and so boring. One of two things have to be true. Either a big revival needs to be around the corner so that this really looks like what it is, or the people who aren't doing it really need to be punished bad in the afterlife to make up for the fact that I'm not having fun now and they are. And that's where religion ends up on both those points. We're always looking for something that never comes, or we're wanting the people not suffering like I'm suffering to hurt really bad. Either one's not good.
Well, I experienced the simple love of Jesus through my neighbor this weekend.
Yeah?
We're up at Shaver Lake.
Yeah.
The guy that lives across the way from us.
You found Chipper?
No.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
But that'd be cool.
I've got Chipper out front.
You do, but you got an orange one. We got a new cat named Turbo. He's hilarious.
I told you to tell people on the podcast.
And he's not dead. He's fine.
I had people last week say, you know, brag under the cat. They're going, oh, gosh.
We do.
No,
yeah.
Brad can't
Turbo.
Have
he's hilarious. He's great.
He'll
you know why we call him Turbo? Because the little cat, the minute you put it in your lap, all of a sudden his little, like, purr thing, but it goes super fast. And then when he races around the house, he goes really fast. So I figured the only name you can name him is Turbo.
The over-under is February 20, whether he'll still be in the Cummings household or not.
Oh, God. My children just stopped listening to The God Journey because of Wayne Jacobson and his cat fetish.
Anti-cat fetish.
Anti-cat fetish. And you got ones hanging out your house. I think it's the Lord having a laugh.
No, it's the neighbor's Mormon cat snuck
but
over
I
here
got,
doing right, outreach.
Back to what got us here.
It's not going to work.
I got loved by our neighbor. He let us use his ski boat for the whole weekend. Water skiing up on Shaver Lake.
You hauled it up there?
No.
It was already up there?
It's already up there, and he just let us use it for
your
the weekend.
Your neighbor up there?
Yeah.
Okay, well, you live in a whole kind of life.
Love your neighbor think. As thyself. I went, he was loving us.
I'm
I thought that was very nice.
Glad you invited us for a little water skin. Always
you
appreciate
around,
being
dude.
In
you were in Minnesota looking for mosquitoes and having bad corn.
No, got none of that in Minnesota. Got none of the corn. I watched a white dog turn into a black lab, though.
What?
took it for a walk, and next time we saw it, the guy was introducing it as his black lab. Oh, it was. It'd been rolling in mud.
City.
Oh, it had burrs. Must have been 500 burrs in that dog. Somebody's going to spend a long afternoon shaving it.
There you go.
I tell you, I had so much fun hanging out with these people in Duluth. This just,
yeah, you had a blast.
Oh, gosh.
Why?
I love this thing. For one, it's people weren't even on my radar screen, really.
Yeah, it's Duluth, pal.
I've got people that have, you know, been inviting me 2 years. Can you come? Can you come? And I was like, yeah, I'll let you know a couple months out. Let's be praying. Let's see what happens.
God finally spoke to you.
Well, I had this trip already planned, Marquette, and into Wisconsin to meet these dear folks who sold, gosh, so many He Loves Me and checkbooks. And so I thought, and I got this email from Duluth saying, hey, if you're ever near the area, we'd love for you to come by. And so that really fell into place quick. And it's one of the reasons why I don't keep a full schedule. It's one of the reasons I want to be accessible to that kind of moment. Here's a very...
Last-minute spontaneity?
Well, it's not spontaneity on my side of it, because I'm fine with that. On their side of it, it was a very propitious time.
Wow.
This is the time they needed a brother just to come by and encourage their journey. And these were people that are spilling out of a pretty legalistic kind of thing. Some are being thrown out by relatives. I mean, it's intense.
Ooh.
And all the mental patterns, all the biblical patterns are of performance-related, guilt-induced, punishment kind of behavior. And to sit with a group of people over a weekend for whom the language of grace and life and love is something that's been in their heart from a distance, but they've not ever been able to put their heart and heads and hands around it. And for us to be able to talk and questions, answers, and just what that's my favorite kind of weekend right there. And not people who are way down the road and you're just kind of encouraging them. But, you know, if you're not there, they're fine. But people that are just on the cusp of something new, in the throes of how rejected they are by the thing that validated them for 20 years, even internally validated. Now they're outside of that.
It feels different.
With all kinds of questions and accusations coming at them. And I just can't tell you how many things God just arranged over the weekend. Not even what was happening in the larger conversations, but even things that were going on, just one and two of conversation and prayer for situations in people's lives. Great, great weekend. It was just a lot of fun. So my friends in Duluth, love you guys. Enjoyed it. Thanks for everything. Fabulous.
You just need some good corn.
Don't even think I got served corn in Duluth. I got it in the Marquette, and I got a little bowl of it, a little bit cut off a cob. But they don't worship corn like you talked about.
Oh, I tell you.
I was surprised.
I don't understand.
And I was on a Native American reservation. Some people really just living on the edge of a reservation, loving the kids that are there, that are pretty much going through rough seasons in their life. And they're just giving their lives to these kids.
Oh, how cool.
Pretty cool. Found out some ways maybe the school district was abusing them. So even some of my school district stuff came, what would you do about this? And I gave them a strategy that had not crossed their minds yet that would be pretty effective getting that school district to own up to some problems. So it'll be interesting to see what comes of that. So,
well, welcome home.
It's good to be home. It's great to be home. One of the conversations that kept coming up, not just the revival thing, that was one of them. Another one, just I was with a couple that have two autistic boys that are, you know, fairly severe and quite a challenge for them. They were talking about how people look at their lives saying, I don't see how you guys cope with that. And he says, you know, we don't feel that way at all. We just live in this thing, and it's kids we love, and, you know, we don't feel that, yeah, it's a challenge. Yeah, there's other stuff, but it's... And it reminded me of something I heard Paul Young say, author of The Shack, a bit ago. He was talking about someone saying, I couldn't imagine God asking me to forgive the murderer of my 7-year-old daughter if that same situation were said to me. And I liked what Paul said. Paul said, that's because you can't imagine grace. Grace is not something we imagine. So we can look at other people's lives and say, I can't imagine you doing what you're doing. I can't imagine you being where you're being. And he said, because you can't imagine grace. You don't know what God gives you when you're in those places that makes doing
that's
what
true.
He... Isn't that fabulous
that's
thought?
True.
I love that thought. Because we always do that for some. We go, oh, God, how do I imagine doing that? And the fact is, why imagine? Because you can't live outside of grace.
Yeah, we don't get grace. We get grace for now.
There's no hypothetical grace.
No, you get grace for now. And when he says that he's not going to give you too much to have to deal with, but he will give you grace in those moments. It's like, you know, I think we just got to take God at his word and just go, all right, Father, help. Here, help me now.
And I love what that does is it invests grace inside of a person and a reality, not grace is a principle to live by. Because I think that just proves that it isn't. Because you can't say, oh, yeah, I could imagine grace being there. I could get through that. No, you can't. But when you're in the middle of stuff, I look back at things I've been through, particularly they're very dark and difficult and painful, and I look back and go, I don't know how I got through that. But grace took you through it.
There was someone with you.
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah, good stuff. Lots of email. I mean, we've gone 2 weeks again, and email stacked up, and I'm going to have to declare email bankruptcy.
I'm not the only one. I'm only 400 behind.
My daughter walked into the local border store down here, and she was with four friends and saw He Loves Me on the front rack in the front of the bookstore. And she was telling, look at it. This is Amy on the cover. And they're going, what do you mean that's Amy? That's Amy right there. That's my dad. That's Amy. They go, what do you mean? What you can't see me doing the borders. Oh, it's the book. It's my dad's book. And Julie said she was so shocked. I knew Barnes & Noble were doing some stuff with it. I had no idea Borders had moved those in the front of the store. But you would know from my email. I'm getting...
All things windblown, pal.
Everyone wants
just about everything that's there.
I know.
It's all good.
It's all good.
It's changing your life. You can't retire.
I told somebody while we were on this trip, you know, it's probably time. This is maybe you and I could talk about today on the podcast. Remember that John 6 thing?
No.
You don't know John 6?
Tell me John 6.
Okay. A little boy's lunch feeds 5,000 people.
Yes.
Remember?
Ours has done that.
Jesus goes across the lake.
Huh?
The 5,000 people and spouses and children chase him around the other side.
Yeah.
And what did he do?
He took some guys to lunch.
No. No. What did he do on the other side of the lake? He already fed them the day before. Now they chase him around the other side of the lake. Remember what he does? You know what? You're following me. Just because you got bread you didn't work for. I tell you what, unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood, you'll have...
Oh, that's
right. It's time for an eat my flesh, drink my blood kind of podcast. We've got to scare some people away. Because at the end of that wonderful sermon...
Oh, yeah. I learned that in my church growth principle seminar. They didn't have that conversion.
When you look around and feel overwhelmed, you
just
draw
tell
out
people to go
eat
away.
My flesh, drink my blood sermon.
There you go.
And then you got 12 people sitting there looking at it going,
huh?
And you go, are you guys going too? And they go, nowhere else to go. The only people you have left is your staff, the people you're paying to be there. I was telling Sarah coming home, if we're ever going to rest again,
bring it on, Jacob.
It's time for a John 6 sermon.
There you go.
But it is...
I never really thought of those two passages together like that. Thank you.
It's one long story, and it's just brilliant, because what he's saying is, you're not following me for me. You're following me for free bread. You're following me for stuff, and Jesus is just wonderful about saying, you got to follow me. It's not about free food. It's not about easy life. It's me. If you want to eat of me, come on. I'll take you for the ride of your life. If you don't want to eat me, you know what? Go home. That's this hilarious passage. I, of course, paraphrase.
Eat me or go home.
Okay. There's a book title for you.
There you go. I like that. We're getting the succinct version right here. Eat me or go home.
I'm horribly afraid how that is going to be misinterpreted. My gosh. Oh,
won't be the first. Now we'll finally be guilty of what we've been accused of.
Here, Bill in Oregon writes, I've been listening to your podcasts on CD while driving and find them very refreshing and just fun.
Those could cause accidents.
You guys have put into words what I have been stumbling around trying to explain to people I come in contact with, though I find that many just cannot separate themselves from trying to keep God happy with them. I know you've gotten a lot of heat in the evangelical world. I think this is an indication of your message has made some of those in the evangelical world a little nervous.
No.
You think so? You getting problems in the evangelical world? I don't think so either. I would say not from the evangelical world, maybe from the Pharisee Council. getting a little of that. But I don't know. Interesting thought somebody posed at me this week. This is from Barbara Brown Taylor. I blogged on her a little bit because she wrote a book called Leaving Church, and she's an Episcopal woman clergy member.
Well, they're not allowed.
Kind of. To leave?
To leave church?
No. She leaved.
Oh,
she
wow.
leaved.
She leaved. You're tired.
But she posed this in some kind of teaching he refers to. He said, what if something is not God, and I believe that it is?
Wouldn't be the first time.
So this is the Pharisee's favorite question. The answer is heresy. Now, I'd beg that question a little bit, because I tell you, we get pushed back on the shack being heresy, which I think, you know, when I sit and talk to people who even have concerns about the shack, which I'm okay if people do, But the fact is that we believe in the virgin birth of Christ, his atoning death on the cross, his resurrection from the dead, his coming again. We might see the Trinity a bit differently, and it's amazing how all that other stuff gets trumped. And you're now a full-blown, breathing, hellfire-breathing heretic. Because, you know what, you might see, you might not find the hierarchy inside the Trinity. Or you might even believe that sin is its own worst punishment, and that God doesn't need to beat people to death.
And roast them forever?
Yeah. Although, we have to talk about that a lot more if we're going to start that dialogue. But let's not do most people, yeah. But no, we're going to say to hell with it and move on. But she asked this, and we have a term for believing something that isn't true. What she postulates, though, is why don't we have a word for when something is God and we don't believe that it is? And he said the Pharisees neglected to consider this
question. Oh, that's blaspheming the Holy Spirit, huh?
I don't think so. Some say that. But I think that's an interesting thing. The people who are all worried about heresy have their little bordered truth. Do you fit in it or not? And what they're in the most danger of is seeing something outside their bubble
that is true.
God, and they don't embrace it.
They can't declare it.
That's the bigger danger.
See, does truth matter? Absolutely. But I think when you start to define truth apart from recognizing it as a person, you get into all kind of weirdness. I mean, there are true statements.
Yeah.
Okay? And I love true statements.
Yep.
But if you divorce them from the walking out of those true statements in a life and a relationship that's being led and is dependent on this guy Jesus, I think you can misapply a million true statements.
Oh, absolutely.
And so does it remain true if I misapply it? Well, you can quote it all you want, but the real issue is I would like to watch your life. I'd like to see it lived out. I'd like to see truth bear fruit so I can discern whether it's real or just confessed.
Yeah. And then how much are you missing the day you decide, I now at this moment have all truth?
Uh-oh.
Anything new I
hear that wouldn't be a good day.
Must be wrong. And so I have decided to reject as untrue everything I haven't known before a given day. That's just stupid. And I hear that so many times from people that are just saying, I've never heard this before. It must be wrong. No, take it to Scripture. Beyond your own little distorted interpretations of Scripture, and see if, in fact, it stands to the weight of Scripture.
You know, you got Bible verses where it's, I am the Lord, I change not. And then you also have other Bible verses where it says, and the Lord changed his mind. And you just got to sit there and say, okay, back up, people, and get the big picture look. The nature and the character of who this God is doesn't change. But the little moments of direction and the decisions, some of those are fluid. It's not all things are relativistic. It's the fact that, you know what? Truth needs to be applied in given situations.
To life. Yep.
You misapply true statements, and I don't think they remain true. You can beat someone over the head with all your truth, and that would be a misapplication of the truth you were given to bless someone with.
Yeah, or even if we get the terms wrong. We've talked about the table chair thing. If you've been calling something church all your life that isn't church, then when you're outside of it, you feel the weight of, oh, I'm not now living Hebrews 10:26. When you might be living Hebrews 10:26
for the first time
in a more vital, deep, transforming way. And boy, that's where we really have to rethink, because you apply scriptures of terminology that meant something entirely different 2,000 years ago. Take those same scriptures and apply them to terminology that's used in the 21st century after 2,000 years of religious history, you're going to misapply an awful lot of truth and end up with what you just said, no truth at all.
Yeah, and it's like I think that the desire to say, you know what, again, in a relationship lived out with some humility, I think you can walk a good distance with a lot of people and have a very meaningful, fruitful, engaging discussion. I might not agree with all the propositions that they have logged in their mind and heart, but gosh, when all of a sudden love is being reflected in a life that's postured in worship of a person, Jesus, it's hard to argue with that.
I don't see how I can have fellowship with someone who doesn't agree with me on every little item.
You find yourself isolated and very alone.
Not unless
I couldn't even podcast with you, pal, because we don't agree.
not unless you're the pastor. Then you get to make everyone pretend.
And then everyone goes to hell.
That's what's going on in this place I visited over the last few weeks. You've got the thing with the environment is set that the leadership gets to decide what's true. Anybody who deviates from that, or even anybody that asks questions about, is this really true, gets marginalized. It's just, and sometimes escorted out the back door. You're not welcome here anymore. And now you're outside.
Believe the right things.
You're outside the grip of grace. Not even not believing, just asking questions that people consider disturbing. And this freedom will ruin people. And what I have found the last few years, if nothing else, this, there is no growth where there is no freedom. Because if you can't question, and if you can't even misunderstand something in your growth to learn it internally and not just try and embrace some proposition you don't truly believe, there is no growth. Growth comes by coming to be persuaded of the truth, and that comes from being able to ask whatever question you got to ask and struggle with whatever you got to struggle, even be wrong for a bit of the journey. And when you take that away from people, you take away their ability to grow.
Well, you take away the fear dynamics, and you allow people to just sort of like, well, you know, you don't have to. The question of, then I think you actually get a chance to see what's really in them, whether they want to or not, whether that's at all internalized.
Right.
Because I think a lot of times people are behaving not because it's in their heart to want to do those things. They're just so bleeping scared of the consequences.
Bleeping
scared.
Wow.
I
appreciate the edit.
Thank you. I held back.
My mom appreciates the edit, I'm sure.
I know. But I look at that and it's like, if you were God and you were looking at the desire to have truth in the inward parts, is that reflective of truth in the inward parts? No, that's still the outer court reality of doing the gyrations because I'm afraid of the consequences. There's no heart transformation there.
It's hypocrisy. It's performing on the outside what isn't on the inside. And Jesus, the whole Matthew 23 thing.
He doesn't address that.
I'm not really interested in a whitewashed tomb. I'm interested in get the inside of the cup
full
clean.
Of life.
Yes, and when that's clean, it spills out and the whole thing's clean. And I like it. We heard from Amanda in Alaska. I want to thank you and Brad for your podcasts. I have so enjoyed this journey and knowing him and his heart for me. I have never felt so free and loved all at the same time. I almost didn't know it was possible. It's an amazing experience when you just don't know it in your head. It's just what we've been talking about. But you start to really live it in your heart. Thank you guys for speaking what's on your heart. Is there any possibility of you being able to come to Alaska? We have so many friends who would love to hear the grace message.
You were just up
there.
Yeah.
Oh, poor Amanda. Yeah, I was just up there. I wrote her back.
Let's
I was just
fishing.
Sorry, man.
Let's go catch some Alaskan salmon.
Hey, we got five guys in the hot tub in Fairbanks that would like one of us to visit. But
okay, I would sooner go fishing. Five guys in a hot tub is really calling my name.
You didn't see the picture, man. I'm telling you, they sent the picture. I'm like going, you want me to come? And you send a picture like this? Oh,
that's funny.
That's hilarious. Funny. That's what they call themselves, five guys in a hot tub.
Five guys in a hot tub. Woohoo!
Ooh, boy.
I'm not sure what to do with that. But that next?
I didn't.
What about the governor from Alaska, huh?
What about her?
She's got a daughter that's pregnant. Does that invalidate her?
For those that don't know, John McCain, our Republican nominee for president, just selected the governor of Alaska to be his running mate, and she turns out has a daughter, 17?
Yeah.
She's pregnant, 5 months, and she's getting killed for it.
She sounds like a feisty, wonderful lady in a lot of ways, and you're just like, okay, does the fact that her daughter being pregnant, does that invalidate all the rest?
Not for me.
Not for me either.
What gives me pause, why would you put your daughter in that kind of spotlight? Why would you? If I had a 17-year-old pregnant daughter and somebody asked me to run for vice president, I think I'm saying, you know what, it's not my time. I've got other priorities that I don't want to subject my family to the scrutiny of the media or my daughter to this process. That's where I'm most concerned. Why?
That's interesting.
Why didn't that cross her mind? And I don't blame her for it, and she might be a great lady. We don't know that it didn't, but it didn't sway her. Whatever. The desire to run for VP was more important.
I think the thing that I look at is I just go, you know what? The truth is do any of us know the details of the circumstances surrounding all that? No, we really don't. So we don't know if someone is perhaps walking out in a wonderful way something that was challenging and hard and perhaps wrong. And you said, there's like, well, what if they're on a great path now? Is there something wrong with that? You got to ding them because, oh, you know what? You got a ding on your record there.
What ding is that?
Having a baby out of wedlock, huh?
Oh, jeez. Yeah. Yeah. I don't think anybody's blaming her for that, are they?
I don't know. I don't even know enough of the details, but it's hilarious to listen to all the pundits back and forth waxing so eloquently and taking the high road. We just go like, excuse me, I don't seem to remember that 4 or 5 years ago.
Oh, it's that bend for perfection. You know what? If you can jump on somebody for something, particularly in the political world, you just do. Even people that really don't care about the morality of that, but this is a reason to ding John McCain's running mate, ding her. That's just what they do. They get paid for that.
Yeah.
It's retarded. I tell you, I've never been so discouraged about heading to a presidential election as this one. It's all, I mean, here's the two guys that are not going to crawl in the mud and throw dirt at each other. And they're already in the mud throwing dirt at each other. And picking every little weak and puny thing. I did like what Obama said about that. He said, don't forget, I was born to an 18-year-old mother.
Yeah, I thought that was
families
very fair.
Out of bounds. I did think that was very fair too. My goodness, this is the 28-minute burn or something.
Here. we've had some substance. Come on, get to another question.
I don't know if we got. Yeah, this came from Albert in South Africa, and he said, at the moment, I'm working with a youngish guy who attends my discipleship school some 10 years ago. He's an extremely successful businessman in the construction industry. He fairly often tells people he's a Christian. I believe he is, and then in some ways he loves the Lord, albeit not passionately. However, he does not abide by Christian principles or biblical examples. He exploits his workers, speaks the truth only when it benefits him, lies, does not keep promises, etc. There's no longing for intimacy with Christ. He does not fellowship or attend any kind of Christian fellowship. In other words, apart from him saying he's a Christian, there's no other evidence. Couldn't be convicted on the evidence, I guess. In fact, evidence suggests he's not. And I've been thinking that the Lord will keep on blessing him. Why the Lord keeps on blessing him? And then he asks, is it the Lord? Because business is very successful. So the conflict is, well, if he's such a rat, how can God be blessing him financially? And that God in his mercy will hold judgment. However, just a few days ago, the scripture Galatians 6, do not be deceived. God is not mocked. Those that live by the flesh will die by the flesh. There are some things there that appear to differ from my understanding of God's unconditional love. Could you perhaps do a discussion on the subject of a podcast? And if you do, you'd be kind to let me know, since I don't listen to all of them. No, you just didn't want to be sure.
Well, you just have to find this one on your own.
I added that. No, I'll let him know. I got his email here.
You know, when we look at the microcosm of people's circumstances, it's because it's going well for someone, and almost always we define that financially.
Yeah.
You know, materially.
Or comfort.
Oh, that's the blessing of God.
Yeah.
And yet, I got to be honest, I've watched other people that have very little and talk about the richness of life that they're aware of and know. And it isn't just, well, that's the only option they have to feel good is to redefine it. No. I just don't know that is really the right equation. That everyone that is doing well materially, prospering, is therefore, that is the blessing of God.
Is the result of God's blessing.
Yeah.
It is some affirmation of the way they're living.
Yeah, I don't think you can remotely use that as an affirmation of the ethicalness of how someone's living.
Oh, particularly in this country. Most people that are rich cheating somebody, somewhere or other. Not to make any judgments. But
oh, no, not heaven forbid you to that ever happen.
Company accepted, of course.
Oh, gosh. But I tell you, that is so in the fabric of how we look at people and look at things. And how people, quote, do the heavenly math of whether I can validate myself or not. And I'm going like, I don't think your possessions validate anything.
No, I agree. Absolutely. But then he talks about the Galatians 6, reaping what you sow. Is that somehow violate unconditional love? That's his question.
Does reaping what you sow violate unconditional love? I don't think so. Because I don't think the circumstances of what happens in my life necessarily demonstrate whether I am or am not loved by God. I think I am unconditionally loved, whether I ever realize it, whether I know it, embrace it, reflect it, and enjoy it. I think I am loved, period.
Yeah, I can't answer this differently. I have never liked the term unconditional love. I don't ever use it except in a conversation like this. Because so many people think, well, God just loves me, so I can do whatever I want, doesn't matter. I'm not sure God's love is unconditional, which isn't to argue that it's conditional. I think there's a reality here. God loves you.
Period.
At the core of his being.
Yep.
He invites you to know himself. He does not, that love does not protect you from all consequences to the dumb things we do. It just
exactly.
doesn't.
No.
Look at the prodigal. That prodigal father loves that boy out there doing his sin thing, but in his own person, the boy is reaping the consequences of his sin thing.
Yeah.
It's not going to say, I love you. I'll just make none of that happen. Everything will be good. And I think that's how some people interpret love. Love means God gives me goodies. And if I don't have goodies, that proves on the other side that he doesn't love me.
Or love protects me from consequences of my stupidness.
Yes.
Which I don't really think is necessarily love, because what instruction is there? That leads to only confusion at times.
Yeah, the way God is saving us by his love is to transform us to think differently and thus live differently. And I do think there is a reaping to righteous kinds of actions. Things that God, it's not God, I'm rewarding you for being a good boy. But when I've done what God's asked, it leads to certain kinds of things. Some of it may be blessings externally. Some of it may be more trouble and more hassle. There are consequences to all that we do.
And the amassing of resources doesn't always lead to just freedom, simplicity, and blessing. Sometimes it's its own curse.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, you look at the dynamics and it's like, gosh, I think there's a lot of different interpretive lens that are very subjective about how we perceive. Typically, if I want something and don't have it, I'm not feeling blessed of the Lord.
You think?
Yeah. But it's like, if I have what I want, well, oh, I feel blessed and I must be validated. And it's like, I don't know that any of those things are true.
Yeah, I don't think they are.
I think the reality is, you know what? This thing is walked out relationally, and I do think that you reap what you sow, but I don't know that you can always look at a one-to-one correlation of that, nor do you necessarily know the season and the time frame. I don't think everything that I do, I will now reap temporarily next week and see there's the outcome and the fruit. I think sometimes it's like, you know what? There's a lifetime of sowing, and sometimes, guess what? The recompense for that doesn't come with any immediacy right now. It perhaps comes as loss of reward later.
Yeah, but I think there is, I think what Paul's getting at in Galatians 6, there isn't a cause-effect to things. Life gives way to life.
Yeah.
If I'm responding to the life of the Lord in me, that life builds and bears fruit. If I'm loving people around me, I saw so many times when I worked in the whole institutional environment and somebody needs to move, and they try to get people to volunteer to help them move, and they want to run an announcement in the bulletin, and nobody comes. Nobody wants to come. Nobody, because why? They've never invested themselves into friendships, so there are friendships around that want to be involved with them. They've not reaped, or they're not sown into relationship. They don't reap the rewards of relationship. Now, other people can choose to say, well, even though I think you're a scumbag, I'll come over and help you move just out of compassion. That can happen, and often does.
Scumbag mover company.
But the reality is, when I love into people's lives, there are people that will love, not everybody who I love loves me in return. So there you go. It's not cause and effect in everything. But in general, if you love others, you're going to find people loving you. If you are a friend, you will have friends. That's what Galatians is getting to. There's a cause and effect. And if you're mean to people and cheat people, then people are going to be, at some point up the road, you're going to probably get cheated yourself. It's just the way the world works. But that has nothing to do with the fact that God loves you. And even if you've done really stupid things and you're reaping really stupid things right now in your life, that God doesn't want to start loving you right where you are. Not start loving you, but continue loving you in a way that get you on a different track.
Yeah.
Not I love you so much that I'm just going to take all the bad
you're
away
immune from all
and
your
just
consequences.
Give you all. Yeah, I think that's just nuts.
Well, you know, it's interesting. The whole reaping and sowing thing. I remember at the tail end of my years in college, I was driving with a buddy. We're coming back from a wedding and we're going cross country. We're in some place in Texas and it's got plateaus and there was lightning that night. And it ended up igniting one of the cornfields. Or wheat fields, whatever it is. And we're staying at this very ranch that night, and its fields are burning. And he's going, well, I'm not sure it's the best place to stay, but we showed up at the right time to help, I guess. In the morning, it was so interesting. It's like this family, honestly, their harvest was devastated. Hmm. But this father said, you know what? I said, how do you deal with this? What you know, it's like, what a total freak of nature. That's not an act of God. It's freak of nature. What do you do with that? He said, you know what? We make do. I'm a good farmer. I'm going to continue doing what I do. And in the end of it all, we will be fine. God provides for us.
I stood with my dad on our patio when I was about 10 or 11 years of age. And we're getting 2 inches of rain dumped on his grape crop that is now laying in the middle of the row drying, which means it is going to rot. He's going to disc under his entire crop. And I remember he's just standing there just looking at his field, and the rain's just pouring down. We're under this tin roof, so it's really banging. And I said, Dad, what are we going to do? And Dad never took his eyes off the field. He didn't look at me. He just said this. You know what, Wayne? God's always taking care of us, and I expect this won't deter him from doing that. Now,
You put both stories together. When I came away that day is I recognized there was something of a longstanding wisdom of just going like, you know what? I don't control all things. Yeah. Anyone that's tried to make anything go has got to know that. It's like, you know what? Sorry. You can do all the things right, but you don't have control over all that stuff. And there's a sense of a trust in the enduring goodness of God that just says, you know what, cause and effect. It's not like, did he look at you like, Wayne, did you sin? Is that what caused this?
Well, Dan got that. Dan wrote us from Kansas City. And Dan's our good buddy.
What do you mean?
He said, I was on the knees of the floor of the emergency room with my nose on the tile floor and my teeth were chattering from the pain of a kidney stone.
Oh!
And as I was in this position, the ER nurse came in and said, maybe while you're down there, you can figure out what it is that you did that was so bad that God gave this to you.
You're kidding.
Then maybe he will forgive you and make it pass.
You're kidding.
He said, I did my best to tell her that I was already forgiven and this wasn't God's judgment.
This was at the Sisters of Mercy Hospital?
I don't know where it was. See, that's the side of sowing and reaping that isn't true. Oh, you have a kidney stone, so why don't you go in there and figure out what it is that caused God to give it to you? And that's not Dad sitting on the farm looking out and saying, okay, what did I do wrong this year that now my crop's getting rained out? Bad stuff happens to everybody. That's not the sowing reaping deal. The sowing reaping deal
is... And good stuff happens to everybody.
Yes, absolutely. But the sowing and reaping is, when I sow to life, I'll reap life in the midst of whatever crud's going on. If I'm sowing to death, I'll reap death. And that's not relative
to
everything.
In the midst of whatever else is going on.
Exactly.
I think if you don't see this in spiritual terms, where that is the ultimate reality that affects other, and you try to do a bean counting approach to this little tit for tat, you're going to get such confused mess. Because I don't know how you interpret life like that.
And Paul wouldn't. The one who wrote Galatians 6 talks about being shipwrecked, being, you know, pressed down, and yet not given up. He talks about very dire circumstances. I don't think Paul's saying, gosh, I must have taught the wrong scripture last night, so now we're getting beat up by robbers today. That's not the sowing reaping thing. The sowing reaping thing is that longer stretch of how we're living. Are we living to him or living to ourselves?
Well, let me ask this. Do you ever think that there's a period of time when God's really mad at you and somehow you're living wrong and somehow your own conscience, you don't know it? I mean, do you need to look at circumstances to figure out, I get smitten in my own conscience where you're just going like, you know what? I don't feel like, oh, God's really mad at me. You just go like, gosh, I know that's wrong. Period.
Yeah, or I know the one who loves me isn't thrilled with this.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to be mad or angry. It's just like I would with my kids, you know, do something stupid or something I don't really like. You don't
sit there and react in a situation.
I'm just angry. I'm going to kick you a bit and I'm going to slug you good. It's just kind of like, oh, man, that hurts. And if I can get through to them something that'd be better, I would. If not, we'll go on. And if we do that, why wouldn't God be a whole lot better than that we are, who are so broken in the way we try to love sometimes?
See, I think the kind of the performance orientation that just sort of tries to do almost a reverse legalism on this, you end up in such a confused mess because you don't control all that stuff.
Right. But you don't have to negate the sowing and reaping that is right and valid as well.
True.
Blessings. We're late. See you later.
Traveling with us on the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.